Thank you for listening to this message from the pulpit of Coon Rapids Baptist Church in the suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I want to invite you to open back up your copy of the scriptures to Ecclesiastes chapter number 10. We're going to look at this amazing chapter here together this morning, Ecclesiastes chapter number 10. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. For the first 8 chapters, we have stared vanity in the face. We've looked at it, and we've nodded our heads as we've thought about pleasures and how the big pleasures of life do not provide the meaning and satisfaction that we were looking for. We have groaned in agreement as we have considered God's providential control of life, and sometimes things are just out of our control. Some things in life we just can't do anything about. Timing is not on our side, as it were. God is in control. We've been there. We've experienced that. And sometimes the only way we can find meaning in life is to remember that He is in control. And someday people will give an account of their lives to Him. Our hearts have ached as we have looked in chapters 6, 7, and 8 at pain and prosperity. The prosperity isn't always good, but on the other hand, adversity isn't always bad. We've talked about when bad things happen to good people, the preacher has in the book of Ecclesiastes here. And as it were, we've taken the sheetrock and we've ripped it off and we've seen the mold of life behind it. We've pulled back the sheets and we've seen the blood-spattered evidence of the bedbug-infested life in which we live. We've stood there in the doctor's office and he's thrown up the x-ray of life under the sun, showing the tumors, showing the faults, showing the problems and the heartaches of life. So far this year we have, and in this series we have, seen the vanities of life in the first 8 chapters. And we come to chapters 9, 10, and 11 here in the body of his message, in the body of the preacher's sermon, and he's telling us how you should live life based upon all these vanities, all these frustrations, all of these hardships in life. He wants you to be able to live that life. Grace is 16. She's grown up around Christian things. She knows Christian teachings quite well. She's been brought up in church and been brought up in a Christian home. She knows the do's. She knows the don'ts of the Christian life. But Grace is old enough now to also know that Christians aren't perfect. And to be quite honest, at this point in time in Grace's life, as she looks at this, the mistakes and the failures of Christians glare before her face far more than the glories and the splendors of her great and marvelous God. And as she is honestly so focused upon the mistakes and the failures and the sins of human Christian people instead of the glories of her God, as she focuses on that, she begins to wonder, little by little, what life might be like on the other side. What life would be like if she lived differently, if instead of pursuing the path down the Christian walkway that she's been brought up to follow here, if she were to try a different path in life. And she's wondering here. She's really not necessarily thinking completely about jumping ship, but what if she just tried a little bit on the other side of the fence? What if she just dabbled in it just a little bit there? What could be the harm of trying a little bit of life on the other side? Janet's quite a few years further down the road than Grace. And for Janet, life has taken quite a few disappointing turns. Quite a few frustrating events have come into her life. And as a result, as Janet is going down the road of life and having gone through all of these twists and turns that have been hard in her life, she's really honestly taken her foot off the spiritual gas pedal in her life. She's just begin to let off just a little bit here, not making any crazy turns or changes in her life, but just beginning to let off, just beginning to let a little bit slide in her walk with God. And it's only a little. She's convinced that she's in control. She's convinced that she can adjust things and certainly will never let it go too far. Is just a little bit really that much of a deal? Brad's 29. Brad's not mad at God. Brad hasn't gone through the adversities of life. Brad's not contemplating quitting on the Lord. But Brad's just been toying with a little bit of sin here. He's just messing around with it a little bit here and just a little bit there, and it looks kind of fun to play with. It looks kind of fun to try it out and just to kind of get close to it here and to think about it just a little bit in his life. Is it really going to be that big of a deal? Surely it won't matter that much. It's just a little bit of it. This chapter before us in Ecclesiastes chapter number 10 outlines for us one of the responses that people have to the frustrations and to the questions and to the emptiness and vanities and meaninglessness of life. People respond in different ways, and this chapter describes one of those ways. Many times people, as we looked at last time in chapter number 9, their response to life is really to sit down. Their response in life is to sulk. Their response in life is just to sit on the spiritual bench, so to speak. And in chapter number 9, he said, listen, you need to live fully. He tells you, listen, death is unavoidable. And he says, life is unrepeatable here. You don't get another shot at it. He says, circumstances are unpredictable, and you don't know how much time you have in life. He says, wisdom is unprofitable. It's not all about understanding everything and figuring everything out and having wisdom in this life. So he says this in the middle of chapter 9, live fully. He says, go thy way. Get up and get going and serve God with your life. He says, enjoy everyday life. He says, make everyday special. Enjoy life with your wife. And he tells you this, go out and do your best. Live fully, because some people, their response to the meaninglessness and the frustration of life is to sit down on the bench, and they need to be challenged to live fully. But some people respond differently, as he's going to describe in chapter number 10. And they're going to take this idea of, hey, if I'm supposed to live fully, then maybe that means I can live wildly. Maybe that means when you talk about eat and drink, it's an eat and drink and party and live wild, for tomorrow we're going to die anyway. So let's just live it up. Let's just do whatever we want. Let's try some life on the other side here. Let's step across some of those boundaries. Let's just do some fun things, because after all, you only live once. And there's a tendency in people to overcorrect the wheel. There's a tendency of people to go to the extremes here. And so he is very carefully telling us, listen, meaning and satisfaction in life is not in living foolishly, but in living wisely. And he wants to help you get that in your heart and mind. So in chapter number 9, he said, live fully. And in chapter number 10, the truth that I want you to see today is live wisely. And when the devil comes and begins to tempt you in this life, when you begin to get frustrated at God, when you don't understand why bad things happen to good people, and when you don't understand why all the wicked people are living so prosperously year after year, and you're frustrated all about this, and you're tempted to just step over the line, you're tempted to live a little foolishly, you're tempted to go beyond the bounds of what you ought to do as a Christian, come to chapter number 10, where he commands you and challenges you and provokes you and says, listen, don't go down that path. That is not where you find meaning in life. Live wisely. And he does so with a bit of an introduction to his point in verses 1 through 3. I want you to see this introduction. He gets our attention immediately in verse number 1, where he says this, dead flies. I mean, that's a little uncouth. That's not something we want to talk about every single day. Disgusting. Dead flies. And you can think of these dead flies rotting away, as he's going to talk about here in this verse. And that is disgusting. He's talking about dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. The ointment of the apothecary would be like some of you ladies have this Bath and Body Works lotion, or whatever you go, wherever you get your lotion and that scented, all that scented variety of sprays and all of that stuff that you get. But here's this tub of lotion, and it's a beautiful smelling thing. It's expensive. The apothecary, the perfume maker, has worked to make it, and it would smell so wonderful and lovely. And here is this tub of lotion that this person has to lather all over their body in the hot Mediterranean sun. And he says, you can have all of this beautiful ointment, but you take a little bit of these dead flies. And here are these dead flies, and they've crawled in there, and they got stuck down in the muck of it, in the lotion, and they begin to die. And one follows the next one. And soon you got several of them in there. They're dying, and they're rotting. And he says in very vivid terms, they send forth a stinking savor. There is a stench there. It sticks with you. Have you driven past a hog confinement? I grew up in Iowa. I had relatives that had hog confinements. It's a smell that sticks with you. I've been out back behind the hog confinements on a hot summer day to find the bodies of the pigs that didn't make it. that they've drug out of the hog confinement and thrown in a pile or kind of dug a shallow hole, and after they get a few of them, they'll throw some dirt over them. And on a hot summer day, I've been there and I've smelled it. And that smell of those rotting bodies, it sticks with you. There's been times in our family where someone's had the stomach flu and they didn't quite make it to the bathroom, and you get it all cleaned up, but later on in the week you're there and you're in the room and you kind of, and that aroma is still there, and my wife's been working on getting the carpet clean, you know, and everything, and you try this cleaning agent, and then you try this cleaning agent, and you try this one because you're just trying to get that smell picked up, and it just kind of wafts. It sticks with you. And he says, listen, this is a smell that sticks with you. This is something that you can really connect with in your mind. It's vivid to you. And here he makes the comparison at the rest of verse 10. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. The word folly here is a special word. It's an interesting word. It's a word that refers to a spiritual fool. There's a spiritual lack. It's not just intellectual folly, but this is spiritual folly. This is a person in the context of Ecclesiastes who finds his security and his satisfaction in something other than God. This is the practical atheist, as it were. It's interesting that therefore, in the entirety of the chapter, not one time do you find God's name mentioned as he talks about the fool. This is the person, Psalm 14 and verse number 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. This is the person who is looking at life, and the frustrations of life have caused him to want to walk away from God in his life, to live like a spiritual fool, to be able to say, listen, I can find meaning and satisfaction on my own. I don't need to walk with God in his word every day. I don't need to be in church every day. I don't need to pray to God every day. I can handle life on my own. And so many times the spiritual fool then becomes the immoral fool because they have rejected God. Therefore, they reject God's standards and they go live a rash, wicked, rebellious, immoral life as they've walked away from God. And to be honest, as you and I sit there, I would hope that in your heart, you are saying, listen, that's not me. I'm a Christian. I put my faith and trust in Jesus Christ. I spend time in the Word of God. I go to church here. I think spiritual things are important here. And you say, listen, that's not me. But would you notice the end of verse number 1? It says, so doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. And I would dare say that verse describes most of us here. You have a reputation of wisdom and honor. You have a reputation for doing what's right and following the true and wise path. You live an honorable life here, but the frustrations of life creep in and the difficulties of life creep in, and you begin to think, what if I just stepped over the line? You begin to be tempted to just try a little bit of this folly. You begin to be tempted to just pull away from God and live a little bit of life on your own. And you can handle life on your own here. And here is a person who is living wisely, who is living honorably, who is living as he ought to be, and yet he is tempted to live foolishly. And I would dare say that makes this chapter applicable to you and to me in our everyday lives. And the challenge that he wants to tell each and every one of us here today is this. You cannot live foolishly. You cannot go out there and try all of this, because just a tiny little bit of it will make your life stink. And that is the truth that I want you to see today. You must realize that a little folly makes life stink. You want to talk about what's meaningless? You want to talk about bringing frustration in your life? You want to talk about making your life vanity of vanities, all is vanity? Just try folly, and you don't have to try much of it. And it will ruin your life. The answer isn't an abandon of God. The answer isn't to go live foolishly. The answer isn't to go live wildly. It will make your life stink. If you're taking notes, verse number 1 tells us this, don't think it won't matter. Don't think it won't matter. It will. A little tiny bit of it will matter in your life. Verse number 2, he says, a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left hand. Second truth he wants you to see by way of introduction is, don't think that you can have both. He says the wise man's heart's going to the right, the fool's is going to the left. Clearly, these are two different directions. Don't think that you can live a life of wisdom and honor, verse number 1, and yet go in the way of foolishness. You can't have both here. In the scriptures, no offense to those of you that are left-handed, going to the right was often seen as the direction of power. Someone on your right hand was your right-hand man, your person of power. It was the place of blessing. When they would pronounce a blessing, they would put the right hand, Jacob did, upon his grandsons, the sons of Joseph there. It was the place of righteousness. Even today, we talk about going to the right hand as being that which is right. So we see these are two different directions, but notice that key word that's repeated twice in the verse. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Listen, there are two different directions here, and you may be thinking about a little bit of that folly. Just understand, if you're thinking about a little bit of folly, your heart is going in that direction. Your heart is the real you. The heart is the core of who you are. And if your heart goes in that direction, it won't be long before, boom, you'll step into it. You'll go wholeheartedly for that way. You'll jump ship completely, and you'll go in that direction. You can't have both. You can't be going in the direction of wisdom and in the direction of foolishness. Your heart is either going this way, or your heart is going that way. And listen, some of you may be sitting here at the frustrations of life, and your heart is thinking about a little folly. Your heart is thinking about, let's try this. Your heart is thinking about over here. It's going in this direction, and it won't be long. Oh, right now it looks good on the outside, but it won't be long before you'll make the full turn and you'll go in that direction. He says you can't have both. He comes down into verse number 3 and makes a third important point in his introduction where he says, yea, also, here's a third thing he wants you to see. When he that is a fool walketh by the way, his wisdom faileth him, and he saith to everyone that he is a fool. Here this person is walking down the road of life, and as he does so, his wisdom fails him. He is a fool, and fools think they're so smart. Fools think they've got it all figured out here. And he says to everyone that he is a fool. That expression can possibly refer to the idea that a foolish person thinks they know it all, and so they think that everyone else is a fool. He is saying, you're a fool, and you're a fool, and you're a fool. He might not actually use those words, but in his mind, because he knows it all, in his mind, because he's got it all figured out, he basically lives as if you're the one that's a fool. You're the one that doesn't know anything. He's not going to receive correction because he's got it all figured out. He knows all of these different things here. He understands it all. You're a fool, you're a fool, you're a fool. But it says his wisdom fails him. His heart fails him. He lacks sense. He lacks common sense. He just simply doesn't have it figured out. And his heart's going in this direction. He thinks everybody else has got it wrong. Oh, no, no. That Christian that's trying to be encouraging me and trying to help me go down the road of life, they just don't understand it. I really have it figured out. That mom and dad that's trying to help me to respond properly through the hardships of life, they don't know anything. I've got it figured out much better than they do. That dear relative that took me out for a meal and that talks to me and spends some time investing in me and tries to help me do what's right. No, I know more than they do. They're the one that's the fool. I've got it all figured out, but he says the problem is that their heart, their wisdom, their sense fails them. And in the other sense of that expression, he's telling everybody else that he is the fool. And how many times it is when a person rejects correction, when a person thinks they've got it all figured out, when they talk like the fool, it's as plain as the nose on their face. And everybody else can look at it. Everybody else can see him. Everybody else can see her and see that they're going down the path of foolishness except that person. Mom and dad know it. Grandparents know it. The siblings know it, that the friends at church know it, the kids at school know it. Everybody else around knows that this person is the fool, except me. And you can think that you can hide it, you can think that it's not going to come out, but sooner or later, everybody's going to know that you've decided in your heart that you're going to go to the left hand instead. So he says, number 3, don't think it will be hidden. It will come out. You see, the text wants you to see in 20 verses here of chapter number 10 that the life of foolishness is a big deal. You might be tempted to think it's just a little bit of foolishness. It's not that big of a deal. I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to go down this path a little bit. Maybe there's meaning and satisfaction. He says, no, they're like little tiny flies. And these little tiny flies will get in there, they'll die, they'll rot, and they'll make your life stink. Foolishness makes life stink. And so in the rest of the chapter, verses 3 through 20, he begins to prove his point. And he does so by using Proverbs. As you read through this chapter here, you're going to think that you're in the book of Proverbs. And it's kind of an amazing thing because, honestly, when you go through Proverbs, especially chapters 10 through 31, it's often very hard to outline Proverbs, isn't it? I mean, one Proverbs talks about this, and then one Proverbs talks about something way over there, and something way up there, and something way over there. I mean, they're just random thoughts, they seem like. And as you read through this chapter, the rest of it, it seems like random thoughts. There's a flow through it. In fact, there's three main themes of truth that are there. They're not my points today. I'm not going to hit them one after another. I just gave those points to you because you can jot down notes under each one of them as you come to them through there. He's going to give these proverbs to you. And in each and every one of them, it's illustrating to you a little bit of folly in those particular areas. But it's also building to one big point in the entirety of the chapter saying, don't go down the road of folly. It'll make your life stink. So the three areas that you'll see often throughout here are leadership, labor, and lips. You look at these three areas and you find that foolishness is exposed in these three areas very, very quickly. Three common areas that we see here. These proverbs are amazing. It's hard to outline them. Sometimes it's even hard to understand them. Proverbs are things where you've got to really chew on it. Sometimes people will put one proverb with one point and then you read another Bible student and they'll put it you know, over with this point. Sometimes even, and I'll mention this, there's a couple different ways to take the proverbs. A couple different ideas that could be behind the proverbs. But all the way through, it's driving home this truth. You must realize that foolishness will make your life stink. Let's have a word of prayer. Father, I thank you for this chapter, and I pray that in these next minutes, we pray that you would just help us to see in graphic detail the terror and the horribleness of going down the road of foolishness. And I pray that your Spirit would put up a warning sign that truly reaches our hearts, that we would not dabble with this stuff, that we would stay out of it. We'd see the seriousness of it, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen. Verse number 4 is our first one, the first section that I want you to see, where it says this: if the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. Now here is going to be something about leadership, and yet it's really something about our responses to leadership. And it talks in verse number 4 about somebody who's in that position of leadership. He's a ruler. He might be the king. He might be the president. He might be your boss. He might be your husband. He might be the teacher in the classroom there. He's somebody in a position of leadership, and he's someone in a position of ruling. And this person is upset at you. His spirit is rising up. In the verse, you're going to be able to feel this going up and going down. His spirit's rising. He is angry. He is upset about something. We're not exactly told why. We're not 100% sure why. It doesn't matter for the point of the verse. But the ruler is upset at you for doing something. And the tendency of us, and many times in our lives, when someone is upset at us, our tendency is to do what this verse says. Leave not thy place. Our tendency is to walk out the door. Our tendency is to say, listen, you're treating me this way. You're upset at me. That's it. I quit. I'm out of here. Our tendency is to get bitter about it and walk away. Our tendency is to be afraid of the situation and walk away. Our tendency is to walk out and quit. But he says, listen, leave not thy place. Why? For yielding pacifieth great offenses. Yielding is this idea, it carries this idea of a calmness. It carries this idea of providing healing to the situation. Instead of walking out, instead of being mad, instead of stomping off in a huff because your leader is upset at you, he says, no, be calm, bring healing to the situation, yield, do what the ruler wants you to do, of course, assuming it's right and things like that, but be calm in the situation. A soft answer turneth away wrath. And he said that yielding will pacify great offenses. If there is something that you have done wrong, it will pacify it. It will calm it down, even if he has been wrong in treating you. And listen, you want to talk about something that brings meaninglessness to life, it is wrong responses. How many times it is that people are in a situation in their family, the people are in a situation in the workplace where somebody in authority is upset at them, and the child responds rightly or wrongly here. The employee responds wrongly, and they say, that's it. If you're going to treat me that way, I'm quitting. I'm done. Here's my resignation. And they walk out in a huff, and as soon as they get out the door, they say, well, how am I going to pay the bills tomorrow? Maybe I should have waited till I found another job. Maybe I should have checked some things out a little bit more here. You want to talk about a way that brings meaninglessness to life? It is something where we respond wrongly here, where we get mad. How many times people have had a wrong response in the past to people in a church, and as a result, they've gotten mad, and they've stomped off in a huff, and for years there's been bitterness. For years there's been frustration. For years there's been the inability for them to go forward in the cause of Christ because the response was wrong. Listen, in the hardships of life, you have to respond the right way. Jesus modeled this. Who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. 1 Peter 2:23. You're only going to be able to do that as you live filled with the Holy Spirit of God. Your response here is important. Don't respond foolishly. Then in verses 5 through 7, he deals with the next section. Again, you see this on leadership here. Let's look at these verses together. Verse 5, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, as an error which proceedeth from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, and the rich sit in low place. I have seen servants upon horses, and princes walking as servants upon the earth. Here again, he's talking about leadership, but this time, he's talking about a fool, verse number 6, being set in a place of leadership. A little thing like putting a fool as a leader can do great damage. You want to cause life to stink? You want to cause life to be a horrible thing? Put a fool in a position of leadership. He says, servants, where they're not supposed to be leading, they have this position of riding on the horse. That was a position of honor. And the princes who were supposed to be in leadership, they've been deposed. They've been put down here. Instead of people ruling that should be, we've got the wrong people ruling here. We've got fools ruling here. The rich would also be synonymous in verse number 6 with the wise. They kind of went together. And so wise people, rich people, have been put down from that position of leadership. He says that will bring much smell to life. That will bring much meaninglessness to life. Verse 5 explains that. He says this is an evil that I've seen under the sun. Evil can be the idea of misery. Evil can be the idea of wrong. It's something that's wrong. It's something that brings great misery to life. It's like an error of the ruler. When leaders make a mistake, it has devastating consequences. Their decisions have huge impact, and they make a mistake. It can be a big deal. Putting a fool into a position of leadership can be a big deal. If a ruler puts a fool into position of leadership, he's made a grave error, a grave mistake. It's a big wrong that he has committed here in life. It's just a little thing. He's my buddy. I like him. He's got a lot of clout with people. He knows a lot of things here, but he's a fool in his life. He doesn't receive instructions. He's godless. He walks away from God, and we put him in a position of leadership. He says that's going to bring a whole lot of meaninglessness to life. That one little action is going to make life stink. Don't marry a fool. Don't have a fool to be the ringleader amongst the kids in those circles. Don't let fools have leadership positions in the church or in the workplace here. Don't promote a fool. If you're a fool, don't expect to be put in a position of leadership. It brings great damage. So we've seen foolishness in our responses, and we've seen foolishness in leadership, and now we come in verses 8 through 11 to foolishness in the workplace, or wisdom in the workplace. Verse number 8, notice it with me. He that diggeth a pit shall fall into it. Whoso breaketh an hedge, a serpent shall bite him. Whoso removeth stone shall be hurt therewith, and he that cleaveth wood shall be endangered thereby. He gives four different situations here called occupational hazards, dangers. And many times, if they wanted to trap a wild animal in those days, they would dig a large pit and cover it over, and the animal would come along and fall in. But he says, listen, when you're digging a pit, you're in danger. You could fall in. That's part of the danger that goes with it. And he says in verse number 8, if you're breaking down a hedge, in Palestine, there were so many rocks, and so they would come over and they would build fences out of rocks. They'd have these hedges, kind of like you see out on the East Coast and in Pennsylvania and whatnot, these beautiful stone fences going down between property. And here you are, that one day you decided you're going to pull this one out, you're going to break it down. And as you're breaking it down, there's been a cavity back in behind the rocks, and a snake's back in there, and he jumps out and he bites you. It's an occupational hazard. It's one of those dangers that you have. My dad talks about going out to South Dakota there and to the farming country there and having relatives that farmed there, and they would be making hay in the summertime. And every time they stepped over the windrow of hay, they looked before they stepped on the other side. Why? Because a rattler could be laying on the other side sunning himself. It's an occupational hazard. Here he talks about in verse number 9, another one, removing stones. Maybe you're in the quarry, maybe you're hauling stones, but something slips on the wagon, a chain breaks, a rope breaks, and all of a sudden they slide down and they break your leg, they crush your body in some way. It can happen. You're splitting wood at the end of verse number 9, cleaving wood, chopping wood. They needed it for firewood, they needed it for building. You're cutting wood, the axe slips, it cuts into your leg. There's dangers that go with it. There are occupational hazards that are out there. Today we talk about the fact that if you're a roofer, there's the danger of falling off. If you're a nurse, there's the danger of getting the disease of the sick person that you're working with. There are different occupational hazards that are out there. But what he is saying is this, he's going to get to it at the end of verse number 9, that wisdom is going to help you, verse number 10 rather, wisdom is going to help you to be successful and say, I see that danger. And I'm going to be careful. I see that there's some danger here. I could fall off and fall into that pit. I'm going to be careful in this matter. There's some dangers in the workplace here. Comes down into verse number 10 and he says, if the iron be blunt and he do not whet the edge, then must he put to more strength. He's just been talking about chopping wood and he says, listen, if you're out there and you've been chopping wood and after a while your axe gets a little bit dull, you can keep chopping wood if you want to, but the smart guy, the wise guy, is going to stop his work to sharpen the axe. And you look at the situation, you say, yeah, but if I stop working, I'm not getting as much done. I gotta keep working. I gotta keep going. I gotta keep chopping. I gotta get these trees done. I don't have time to prepare my axe. I don't have time to sharpen my axe. I don't have time to stop and evaluate and see if that blade is wet or not. I don't have time to do that in the workplace, to prepare, to evaluate, to step and to pull back and say, listen, I need to see if what I'm doing is the right course. I don't have that. And he says, listen, that's foolishness. It's going to take more effort. It's going to take more energies. But if you're going to stop and pull back from the situation and sharpen your axe, do a little bit of preparing, educate yourself on it a little bit, do a little bit of evaluation and say, this is working and this isn't working and I need to make a change here and I need to put some more energies into that situation. He says, wisdom is profitable to direct. It's profitable. It's beneficial. He's been concerned about profit in the book of Ecclesiastes. This will bring success here in your life. Says wisdom in the workplace, it makes a big difference here. And verse number 11 seems to go with that. We've been talking about the snake once already, and he says, surely the serpent will bite without enchantment, and a babbler is no better. This is a common sight in the Middle East, you know. You've got the snake, the poisonous serpent there in the basket, and the charmer comes out into the market, and he pops the basket open, and that poisonous reptile pops out of that thing, and bam, he hits somebody and bites him. Before the enchanter, before the snake charmers even had a chance to get set up and get ready to blow his instrument or begin to work on the snake, boom, that snake comes out and he bites the guy. He snaps at him. He gets him. Hits him with poison. He says, if the serpent bites without the charmer, then the charmer's of no advantage, can be one way of looking at it. He's of no benefit at all. If you've got this snake that's already bitten you. Here it would be like somebody in the workplace having this great idea. We'll use it the roofing situation. They're up on the roof. It's a steep roof. Hey, be careful. Hey, be careful. All of a sudden the guy falls off the roof and the boss says, hey, you know, we should use harnesses. It's too late then. After the serpents bit you, after you've already been bitten and the poison is flowing through your body, it's too late for the charmer to come up and say, hey, let me charm the serpent now. No, listen, there's something to it in the workplace to be on time, to get these things figured out in a timely fashion here. And once it's happened, it's too late here. You can't go back and fix the thing. You've already been bitten. Foolishness really does ruin a lot, and it doesn't take much here. You know the frustrations in the workplace when someone operates foolishly. You know the frustrations of it, and you know how much just a little bit of folly in the workplace makes a huge difference here. He comes down in verses number 11 through 14, and he's going to begin to talk about another area, and this is the area of lips. He talked about labor in the workplace in verses 8 through 11, but now he's going to talk about lips. And honestly, verse number 11 can kind of be a transitional verse. The word babbler there can refer to, the word literally means the owner of the tongue. And so it could be talking about the snake charmer on the one hand, or it could just be talking about you and me with our tongues. And here you have a snake that comes out and bites people and brings them harm. And he says, listen, a person who runs off their mouth is no better than a snake that bites people all the time. A person who just runs the gossip through their mouth, they just talk. One Bible commentator said this, a person with diarrhea of the mouth, they're just constantly talking and spewing out all sorts of filth and disgusting things from their mouth. He says, they're no better than a snake that has no enchanter. So verse number 11 can be taken that way to transition us into verses 12 through 14 where he says, the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. Gracious words means people like you. They want to hear what you have to say. They want to be around you. They want to hear your advice. They want to spend time with you. They're favorable. They're likable here. And they say, a wise man, when he speaks, people want to hear him. But a fool, in contrast, will swallow up himself. The destruction is coming to himself. When we didn't want to be so kind to someone in high school, someone was a little bit annoying. I hate to even mention this in the presence of young people in this room, but give them any ideas. The expression was, pull your lower lip over your head and swallow. You know, quit talking. Pull your lower lip over your head and swallow. It means it was the idea that you were consuming yourself. Swallow your own self. Get away from us was that idea. And really, that's exactly what he's saying. This fool has pulled his lower lip over his head, and he swallowed himself. He's destroying himself with all of his constant blabbing. Verse 13, the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. People say, maybe you could agree or disagree, that when it comes to singing, when it comes to speeches, when it comes to sermons, people remember the beginning and they remember the end. So make sure that those are good. And in between, you can kind of do whatever you want. People fall asleep and all that other stuff. But have a good beginning and a good ending, right? And when you want to look at the fool's words, look at his beginning, it's foolishness. Look at the ending, it's mischievous madness. The word mischievous madness is the idea of evil insanity. The very start of his words is a God-rejecting foolishness. The very end of his words is evil madness. That just totally, you're out of your mind evil. It doesn't even make any sense. All of his words that way are foolish words. Ruining, bringing destruction. You can't listen to any of them. Stay away from him. Verse 14, a fool also is full of words. He just talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and runs his mouth and runs his mouth and runs his mouth all of the time. Fools are very opinionated. Fools are big talkers. They talk about everything. Plato said this, wise men speak because they have something to say. Fools speak because they have to say something. And this guy just has to say something. He's got to be talking. He doesn't know how to just be quiet and listen. He doesn't know the advantage of just sitting there and listening to other people. A fool just runs his mouth all the time. But what we notice about it in 14 and 15 is this, that he's talking about the future and things that he has no idea about. A fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be and what shall be after him. Who can tell him? And he gives in verse 15 the example, the labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them because he knoweth not how to go to the city. He says, this fool, boy, he's got big dreams and boy, he's got big plans and he's going to go on and on and on talking about the future. He's going to go on and on and on about predictions and what's going to happen in the future and what he's going to do in the future. And he's got all of these big plans, but he doesn't have enough sense to put into practice today the things that need to be accomplished to make the future here. He's going to talk it all the time about things of the future, but he doesn't even know them. In fact, verse 15 says this, he's so stupid, he doesn't know how to get to town. He doesn't even know how to get to town, to the city. A fool talks and talks. And you and I have been around them. We've seen them. Maybe we interacted with them amongst friends or amongst family or amongst the workplace. We've been around these fools here, and we know the damage of the foolish lips. It's a big deal. We come to the second to the last section in verses 15 down through 19 where we're back to this idea of labor. You can see a little bit of leadership in here as well, but I'm going to see it from the vantage point of labor. And he starts off in verse number 15, the labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them. You talk about a fool and he's at work and he's working away and the fool just, he gets tired so easily. He's got to have breaks all the time and it's not because he's up in years. It's not because the work's that hard. It's just because he's that lazy. He's got to have breaks all the time. He's got to take a time to sit down. He's got to have a little bit of rest. He just can't make it to break time. He's moaning and groaning. He's telling you constantly how hard his life is. He is just flat worn out all the time. Verse number 15 at the end tells us why. Because he knoweth not how to go to the city. He's sent to town on errands, maybe. He's got to run into town. We're not talking about a little village tucked in behind the mountains. We're talking about a city. We're talking about a metropolis here. We're talking about something big, a focal point. And here's this guy. He's so stupid as a fool. He doesn't even know how to get to town. And he's out there wandering around the hills, up and down the mountainsides, down by the rivers, asking these people, wearing himself out, using all the time of his day, using all of his energies, just trying trying to get to town and he's not getting anything done. You know some fools that are like that? They can work all day long and get nothing done. And be exhausted at the end of the day too. He says that's what a fool is like when it comes to labor. That's how it is. And part of it is it's their own plain foolish stupidity here. They're a fool. And people really do get exhausted at this foolish labor. People work at playing and they play at their work. And all day long they're goofing off and they're dinking around and they're getting distracted and they're not productive. And at the end of the day, they're guilty because they haven't done anything. And that loads them down. That weighs them down, the guilt of that. And they look at the mountain load of work that they got to do for the next day and that exhausts them even more. And they're just plain exhausted when the fact of the matter is they didn't do anything all day long. They're a fool. He uses some pretty strong language in verse 15. Now he talks about their labor in the palace, verse 16 and 17. Woe unto thee, O land, when thy king is a child, and thy princes eat in the morning. Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and thy princes eat in due season for strength and not for drunkenness. He connects this matter of labor to leadership, and he references a child. This might be an actual child, or it could be a word just simply referring to someone who is acting like a child. They're immature. What does a child want to do? They want to get up in the morning and play. What does a mature adult want to do? They want to get up in the morning and get to work and do the things that they're supposed to do. And then when there's time, they can go play. Then when there's time, they can go relaxing. And he says, listen, it's a terrible thing for a kingdom when their king is this immature person who wants to get up and have a party first thing in the morning, eating in the morning. It's not referring to breakfast there, eating in the morning. It's talking about they want to have a party and a banquet first thing in the day and just live wildly and have a party and then they'll get to their work if there's time. No, a truly noble person is going to be someone who eats because I need some strength for the day. I need to have some breakfast to get me through the day here, not just to get drunk out there. Reichen tells the story of King Charles XII of Sweden. He became king when he was a teenager. He was known for his extremely wild behavior. Some of his wild actions included riding horseback through his grandmother's apartment, knocking people down on the streets of the city, practicing firearms as the king and his friends were shooting out windows of the palace. And finally, after a period of time, people were beginning to get frustrated at this immature teenage king here. And all the preachers in Stockholm gathered together and they decided that on one particular Sunday, they were going to preach from one text, the same text, Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 16. This text, woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child. And you know what it's like when your leader, when the person at the workplace is an immature, spoiled brat that doesn't know how to do the work and just wants to have a party, it ruins things when they don't know how to work. In fact, so much so, verse 18 says, by much slothfulness, the building decayeth, and through idleness of the hands, the house droppeth through. You don't do the work. You don't take care of the roof that you're supposed to do. And the thing falls apart here. It's destroyed. Laziness. Verse number 19, a feast is made for laughter and wine maketh merry, but money answereth all things. There are a few people that look at that verse and take it in a positive way. That if you'll get out there and work, you'll have bread so that you can feast and enjoy laughter. You can have wine so that you can be happy and you'll have money to meet all of your needs. Many other people will take that verse as the song of the drunken king up in verse number 16. Ah, feast, let's get out here and let's feast. It's made for laughter. Wine is to make merry and money. We got money. This will take care of all of our problems. We can buy whatever we want. We can bribe whoever we want. We can have all the power that we want because we've got money. Let's just live wildly. It's the foolish life. Come finally to verse number 20. The last area where again we see leadership and we see it intersecting with lips where he says in verse 20, curse not the king, no, not in thy thought. Curse not the rich in thy bedchamber, for a bird of the air shall carry the voice and that which hath wings shall tell of the matter. He started in verse number 4 where the ruler is upset at you and your response is important. Now you're upset at the ruler. You're frustrated at him. He's doing something and you're off by himself and the boss isn't at the water cooler and your parents aren't in the room at the time. You think you've got some privacy and so you're going to start chewing him up. You're going to start roasting him there. You're going to start gossiping about him for a little while there. You're just taking him out here and he says, I wouldn't do it. Somehow they're going to find out about it here. A little old expression that we use, a little birdie told me. coming right from this passage. Some little bird's going to tell them. And you want to talk about foolishness? You want to talk about a meaningless life? Just wait till they find out what you've been saying to them about their leadership. You see, all the way through the chapter, he's telling you this. A little folly will make your life stink. A little folly will ruin a lot. And you're looking at life and you're looking at the meaninglessness of it and you're looking at the frustrations of it and you're saying, listen, maybe I'll just try a little bit. Maybe I'll just taste a little bit. Maybe I'll just sip a little bit of the poison here. And he says, listen, it will only take a little bit to destroy you. Your heart's going in the left direction. You're not going to go in the same direction. And you may be thinking everybody else is a fool, but everybody knows you're the fool. You're the one who is going in the wrong direction, and it will ruin your life. Many years ago, somewhere I heard the story. A young couple were about to be married, and they had worked very hard at keeping themselves pure for each other. It was the night of their rehearsal. They had the rehearsal. The next day was their wedding, and the two of them talked, and they said, well, listen, tomorrow we're going to be married, and tomorrow we're going to be able to enjoy each other as husbands and wives, and it's just tomorrow. It's not going to matter. What if we just go ahead tonight and go all the way? And so they decided that they were going to do that. It was just one night early. And so they went ahead and that night enjoyed their time together. And then, wanting to maintain their reputation, the man got in his car and proceeded to drive across town to back to his hotel or wherever he was living there, making the trip through the middle of the night back to his place when he was struck by a drunk driver. Imagine the phone call the next morning as the bride gets the call saying, your groom passed away last night. Imagine the thoughts that would go through her mind for that one night. Imagine her thoughts a few weeks later when she discovered that she was carrying his child. You can save yourself. You can do all of these different things. You can live so righteously. And in one moment of time, you're going to try just a little bit of foolishness. You're going to experiment with just a little bit here, and it ruins you. You can have a huge pot of beautiful smelling aroma, and a couple stinking flies get in there and will make the whole thing get somebody sick to their stomach as they smell it. And this morning, Almighty God is standing before you with a huge flashing neon sign of warning and danger saying, don't go down that path. Don't even play with it. Don't even touch it. Don't even think about it. Stay far away. The answer in meaningless for meaning in life is not going down the path of folly. A little tiny bit of folly will make your life stink.
Visit us at 11164 Hanson Boulevard or online at coonrapidsbaptist.org.